Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd, and this is the Chuck Todd Cast. As we get closer to the end of the calendar year, this is 2021, by the way, for those of you still stuck in the never-ending 2020 loop, Washington is experiencing something a bit unusual. I'm not talking about the unseasonably warm weather, but it's been a somewhat functional December Congress. As of today, Wednesday, Congress has mostly finished the work it has to do for the year. Debt limit, government funding, defense authorization, all done. But there are still a few notable blank spots. These are the aspirational items. One of them is President Biden's domestic agenda, Build Back Better. And this week, we saw the return of the January 6th committee as a force to be reckoned with after Wyoming Congresswoman Liz Cheney read aloud some of the text messages the committee has received from former White House Chief of Staff, one-time Congressman Mark Meadows. Altogether, pretty bold announcement from that committee's work is far from done. And then, of course, you have voting rights that about half the Democratic Party would like to see prioritized over Build Back Better. So my guest today, the one and only John Bresnahan, co-founder of Punchbowl News, one of the best people you can talk to if you want to know what's really happening on the Hill. Brez, welcome to the Toddcast.
How are you doing, Chuck?
I'm all right. So let me start with my favorite theory of the last 48 hours, and that is that Joe Biden will trade delaying Build Back Better for Joe Manchin's agreement for a carve-out on voting rights. The likelihood of that is what, Mr. Bresnahan?
I just don't see it. It's a good idea. They're talking to Manchin. Senator Warnock of Georgia, Raphael Warnock, made a very impassioned speech at the Senate Democratic Caucus meeting yesterday. He's very eloquent on the whole issue, how important this is. I just don't see... The reason why is timing, because they just did this on the debt limit. If they were to do it again on voting rights, which is an argument why they should do it again, but it's also an argument against. And I think Manchin would see it as kind of unhinging the filibuster.
But he seems to be inching closer to accepting the idea, right? He's saying, well, if Republicans agree that it's something that can be done, even if they don't support it, right? Like what kind of permission slip is he looking for, do you sense?
I don't think he's looking for that. I mean, Manchin, it's funny because Manchin carries this card around with him and says, this is everything Congress has done this year. And it's, the point is Democrats should be talking it up. And second is like, we're getting some things done. We just did defense authorization. We just did debt limit, Why can't we do these things in a bipartisan way? He won't get rid of the filibuster. And then, of course, to do that, they'd have to have Sinema, Senator Sinema of Arizona also. So it's just not Manchin. There's a couple votes out there. So I just don't see it. And I he doesn't like Build Back Better anyway. So that's the thing. I'm not sure what he feels like he would gain from doing that.
As for Build Back Better, why do I feel like it's going to become the child tax credit in about a month and that's going to be the bill? And I say this, it's a pretty substantial bill. Nancy Pelosi called it Social Security for kids. The idea meaning once you give it, you'll never take it away. It'll be one of those benefits that nobody wants to vote against. It's a pretty sizable accomplishment all on its own if it did become something that was funded for 10 years and permanent. Is that going to be the new victory for Biden?
That's a very good point. I don't know. If they can't do Build Back Better, can they do the child tax credit alone? As you say, it would be a huge accomplishment. If you talk to Richie Neal, the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, he's extraordinarily proud of what they've done. It's had an impact on child poverty. By every metric we can see, it's made a difference. This is something Congress got right. So why not do just a straight child tax credit? It would be costly, but it would be good politics and it would be good policy. That's a good theory there. I think we could see a much narrower bill. Manchin doesn't like the climate change stuff. There's a lot of concern over, the EV infrastructure. Is it benefiting Tesla? Is it too narrow? Right. There's a huge problem with salt. We could see a much narrower bill. The other thing, again, along with voting rights or the filibuster, Sinema hasn't said where she is entirely on Build Back Better. She has not said, I'm ready to go on this bill. Right. She hasn't endorsed it. So it's not just Joe. There's other, Sinema is out there. There's another vote out there they still have to get. So I think you're right. I think we could see in a couple of weeks when the child tax credit expires and there's a backlash, we could see Congress being forced to act.
You know, so it's sort of my theory is this is just what you outlined. It's sort of like, okay, wait a minute. We got to do this. Everybody's in agreement on this. And all right, Manchin thinks we should fund it for 10 years. Well, all right, let's do it. And then let me ask you this, if this is a totally crazy thought. If you are wanting to do some climate legislation, there is a bipartisan group to work with if you sort of temper your expectations. Yes or no?
I mean, what will Manchin go through? Remember, he chairs that committee in the Senate.
No, that's my point. It's like, it's a way to write Manchin off. Like, are you better off
trying to say, all right, let's get Collins.
You know, let's get a few of these Republicans who do need to show that there is some, that they've got to be for at least mitigation or adaptation.
There's an enlightened group within the GOP that would do a climate change. But yeah, I mean, Senator Lisa Murkowski, who's ranking member on Manchin's committee and who's in cycle, what does she do? I mean, I know she's got concerns here. I don't know. You still would have the filibuster problem. And with Manchin, you don't have Manchin.
It's just not 60. You're not getting 60 climate votes.
You're not going to get 60. And if Manchin's not on board, you're not going to be able to get rid of the filibuster either. So, you know, I don't know. They're going to have to, in a 50-50 Senate, the bar on something like that in an election year, you could have discussions. Can you get a deal? I'm not sure you can get that far.
What are the ramifications of no Build Back Better? And that's why I keep coming back to, well, Jesus, they'll have to do the child tax credit under that scenario. But right. Like, that's why I go, it's like, well, geez, they have to do that. But what is the downside of nothing?
You know, that is an excellent question. This is something I actually wanted to explore. I was kicking around yesterday with my colleague Jake Sherman, because just this question, because what does it say? Now, let's not give up on it yet. I mean, the President of the United States is pushing pretty hard on it. And, you know, there's only a couple votes he has to get, and presidents can be awful persuasive if they need to be. I think it would be a huge blow for Dems, but I also think, and I hate to say this, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I mean, you and I went through Obamacare, okay? We went through that when they pushed it for so long, and it is good policy. Now, a decade or 12 years later, we can talk, it was good policy. It was good policy, but at the time, it was a huge political disaster. It helped lead to, you know, a 63-seat loss in the House. Yeah. And they lost, what, 8 Senate seats. So, you know, they got killed. So, you know, would it be bad if they cut their losses, see where if inflation calms down a little bit? Did child tax credit, like you said, which I think is a good idea, and maybe some narrow child tax provisions. They have the infrastructure bill. They have American Rescue Plan. If the economy picks up a little bit, Democrats have a better message. I don't think it would be the end of the world. But they would listen.
Well, that's what I think.
I don't think in the end of the world it would be nationally. Inside the party, though, there'd be a huge. The progressives would go. They'd go
right.
Crazy. Yeah.
Right. Well, I think about you brought up healthcare. Remember the other big bill they didn't do that they punted, cap and trade. Right. Yeah. They cut in that sense. They quote cut their losses. They didn't
pass
work.
In the House and let it go in the Senate. Right. Because they couldn't pass.
And it didn't fully work. But they went down that road. Let's move to January 6th. I want to ask you that.
If they don't pass Build Back Better, do progressives stay home on Election Day?
You know, I just go back and forth. How big is the progressive base? And I think it's one of the riddles of the Democratic Party right now. Right? If you look at the Pew typology survey, the progressive end of the Democratic the Democratic coalition is less than 10%, right, of the party overall. But the elected Democrats oversubscribe to that end of the spectrum, right? Elected Democrats are more progressive than the party as a whole. I do think, you know, I've got a long, windy answer here, and I've got I do think progressives would go crazy. And I do think Joe Biden's where Joe Biden's been exposed as our first president since H.W. Bush, who doesn't have a base, or at least doesn't have the right political base. H.W. Bush did not have the conservative base, was never enamored with him. They tolerated him. The first chance they got to bail on him, they did. I feel like Biden. Really,
it's an interesting observation.
I feel like Biden is in this, you know, Biden, this is where I believe the Biden White House misread who their base is. Biden's base is, you know, African-American Democrats, not African-American progressives, African-American Democrats, independent, left-leaning independents, and sort of the never Trumpers.
And suburban, he is not governed to that suburban base. Voters generally.
Yeah. Yeah, right. To me, he has not talked to that part of the base, his base. He has talked to the what he believes is a traditional Democratic base that he's never had a great relationship with. So yes, I think progressives are looking
on that. I agree partially. I think
union, progressives union are looking
very good with yeah union.
Yeah, I think they're looking for a way to get out to flex their muscles. So I do think if you're Biden, that's the reason to keep Build Back Better going, because you can't have the progressives blow you up, but they might if they don't do it.
Well, it also could be what, I mean, you also have something to talk about and push on the Hill, and that, you know, I mean, look. You know as well as I do, we've been doing this long enough. In politics, you're either hit or you're getting hit, you know? So, I mean, if you're not pushing a legislative agenda, somebody else is pushing their agenda. And, you know, he can't afford that. He's already weak enough. I mean, I think the problem since Afghanistan, because Afghanistan was the key moment in so far, it seared into Americans' mind. It called in the competence of this administration. You have Afghanistan, and then you had the resurgence of Delta COVID, and then you had the inflation spike, and then other issues are along with that, crime or perception of crime, and it just felt, you know, we're kind of out of control right now, and we elected this president on a competency basis, not because we loved him, but on a competency basis, and because the last guy was not, you know, was so poor.
Mark Murray and I have discussed this. A lot of the expectations for Biden were actually ridiculously high for a lot of us, because we voted, you voted for him with the idea of two things. This is how we get COVID behind us, and this is how we get rid of Donald Trump. Yeah. Well, a year later, COVID's not behind us, and neither's Donald Trump.
No.
And is that Biden's fault, or is he the unfulfilled promise? Right. And I think that's where he's somewhat of a victim of expectations that others put on him. Now, I think they've mismanaged COVID. I think that what's been in their control, they've mismanaged on COVID. I think that you brought up Afghanistan 3 weeks earlier was one more credibility problem when they declared independence from the virus, right? No. That happened on July 4th. Afghanistan debacle begins a month later. Oh, by the way, this was also the period of time that they swore to us inflation was transitory. Yeah. So you have three major credibility gaffes in basically a 6 week period, and he's not recovered from.
No. And the thing to me was, we took the damn masks off and then we had to put them back on. And I think that just, I think that, and then you've seen it in, and this is all parlayed into the school board fights and everything. You know, I get where people were. They want their life. They thought if they voted for Joe Biden, things would go back to normal. And, you know, it just hasn't happened. So, you know, like your point, the searing moments, you know, but I do think if he doesn't do Build Back Better, I think it just hurts him so much with the progressives. And one more point, they are the money and they are the enthusiasm in the party, or a lot of the money, or the enthusiasm that drives the party.
Yeah. Let me pause there. We'll be right back after a quick break. What is the future of Nancy Pelosi? You're listening to the Chuck Todcast from Meet the Press.
If you ever needed to be persuaded that bad things can happen anywhere, then take a journey with us.
From compelling mysteries to in-depth investigations, our Dateline episodes are available as podcasts.
Follow Dateline NBC now to get new episodes every Tuesday. To listen ad-free, subscribe to Dateline Premium on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or datelinepremium.com.
Great storytelling with a twist from the true crime original.
Join Hoda Kotb for a brand new season of her podcast, Making Space.
For season 5, I am making space to talk to people who are providing a sense of hope and inspiration when life changes course.
Uplifting conversations with inspiring individuals like NFL legend Drew Brees, singer-songwriter Ziggy Marley, and Today's Show co-anchor Savannah Guthrie as you have never heard her before.
I found faith more viscerally, not because the bad thing didn't happen, but because it did.
I promise you, like me, will leave these conversations with some wisdom for your own journey, empowered and inspired to make space in your own life.
New episodes of Making Space with Hoda Kotb are released every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Answer me this riddle. What is Bernie Sanders and the movement of the Democratic Socialists? What has that gotten the Democratic Party over 5 years besides money?
Young voters. I mean, like, and how, young voters.
What's the evidence of that? I heard this. What's the evidence of that? They lost House seats in 20.
They did. That was an extraordinary circumstance. After, you know, they did underperform drastically in the House. We all know that.
Right.
Yeah.
And young voters didn't come out in huge numbers.
And young voters don't come out in midterms, right?
Right.
Right.
I get it. I just, when you look at the damage the S word has done to the Democrats, right?
Right.
I mean, you look at some of this stuff. I mean, it is the penetration among Latino voters on socialism.
Yeah.
It is such a huge long-term problem here.
Yeah.
I do not think Democrats appreciate how deadly that could be. Just when they're starting to get traction in the Sun Belt, they start to have that problem with Latinos. It's a huge problem.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what the other thing to me, and I don't know, and I don't know how this play out. And the other thing I'm watching very closely at the same time, is abortion. Cause I think that's the other huge issue heading into 2022. I'm sure we'll talk about it, but I think if there's one thing to bring, you know, suburban.
That's an important wild card.
I mean, and we already have the second biggest state in the union. Abortion is essentially legal right now. I think that is so underappreciated, the impact of that. And it's just, to me, it's just kind of mind boggling. I didn't think we'd ever see it, to be honest.
I didn't either. Yeah. I didn't either. And I think because I thought, well, John Roberts isn't going to let that happen. And we were right. Yeah. John Roberts wouldn't have let that happen, but he's not in charge of that court.
Amy Coney Barrett did. Right. Yeah.
I think we have to call him a Sagino. He's a chief justice in name only. Is that?
I'm not sure I'll go there, but that's
even, I don't know. Somebody's gonna hear that word and say,
"Yeah, you're gonna get that's somebody. All you. You take that."
Yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah. before we go, I know you got a little time. The January 6th committee.
Yeah.
Are we gonna have the hearings of my youth were Iran-Contra. For others that are a little bit older, the hearings of their youth were Watergate. Is there going to be a 10-day period where the January 6th committee becomes that moment, even for a period of time?
That's a very good question. I mean, that hearing the other day where they voted on the contempt referral for Mark Meadows was pretty stunning to have Liz Cheney, a Republican, you know, named Cheney, you know, or GOP royalty up until the Trump era, reading those text messages out. And you know, the Fox News host, but Donald Trump Jr. reading the former president's son.
Don't we have to call him Kendall now? I mean, isn't it pretty clear he has no relationship? I mean, how is it that he had to call the chief of staff to tell his father to do that?
Now, that was very interesting to think about it because, you know, presidents and the psychology of presidential sons is just something that is
like I said, it feels like an episode of Succession.
Yeah. I do think there is the possibility that those could be, you know, that kind of searing moment that we talked about on that issue. But I do think there's a threshold we have to get to. They have to make a decision. Are they going, and we saw this in the text messages, they referred but didn't name, you know, a Republican member texting Meadows saying, I'm so sorry we weren't able to do what we needed to do for you. I mean, are they going to cross the threshold where they're
what
going?
What happened? What are they? Benny Thompson seems to be very cagey about whether they're going to subpoena members of Congress. Yeah. And I assume it's all about fear of retribution. Is that right?
The first thing that you have to think about when members is whenever there's an ethics case or anything, and you say, well, why can't Congress do something about it faster? Because the first thing that members think about is that could be me. Okay. They always think about it. That's the test. So your point is, they did this with Devin Nunes's phone records, and Republicans were outraged during impeachment. They got Devin Nunes' phone records, and it was, a huge outrage. And now they've gone after Meadows on a contempt referral. That's the first time, I believe, in a couple hundred years we've seen something like that. Now are we going to go after phone records of Kevin McCarthy, who could be the next Speaker of the House? Think about that. Are we going to go after – are we going to subpoena Kevin McCarthy? I mean, listen, if the Republicans are in the majority next year, are they going to subpoena, Hakeem Jeffries, if he's the minority leader?
Or Adam Schiff. You can see that. You know how much they love Adam Schiff.
I exactly. Adam Schiff, Ilhan Omar. Are they going to do that? So I don't know. I think this is a real – they better be really, really thoughtful before they cross that threshold. Because I think before we get to the public hearings, that is the question they have to answer. How far are they going to take this? And to me, they're right there. This is the decision time for them. Are they going to go after these Republicans' phone records? Are they going to go after their texts and emails? And are they going to subpoena them?
Is it easier to do Gosar than it is McCarthy? Is there a distinction?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kevin McCarthy, you don't go after party leaders. I mean, he could be the next Speaker of the House. I mean, if the Republicans win 25 seats, he will be the next Speaker of the House. So,
they'll go ahead and pick on Gosar because they can. And maybe a Mo Brooks, which my guess is Mitch McConnell will have no problem with in that Senate race and anything to mess that Senate race up for that guy, right? I think what McConnell's thinking about is not whether that guy can win or lose. He's thinking, I don't want that guy in my conference. Mo Brooks is not going to be a cooperative senator.
It's not going to hurt him. He's already got folks. He's already got issues. Yeah.
But isn't the scenario where they, quote, invite McCarthy and he just doesn't come?
Yeah. And then what do you do? If you subpoena him, here's the thing. Can he drag it out? This is the whole thing. I mean, this is, can they drag this out? I think McCarthy's already got his lawyers ready to go. Jim Jordan's got their lawyers ready to go.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a big threshold. Can Congress subpoena another member? I mean, the idea is crazy. I mean, in an ethics.
But do they need it? I mean, it feels like they have enough information to tell the question is, what is the goal of the hearings? Is it to tell the most complete story they can of what really happened? And I feel like they're 85% of the way there now.
They have a long way. And I want to go back to one issue. I mean, Meadows tried to buy his way out of this. He didn't want to testify. So he gave him, thousands of text messages, 7,000 documents or 7,000 text messages, right? So they tried to cut a deal. They said, we'll give you this stuff. And, and then the committee said no. But, I mean, first of all, George Terwilliger is his lawyer, is an excellent lawyer, but was that a mistake? Their strategy there, and like you said, they've got a lot of ammo. But does that lead them in evidentiary? Does that lead them in 10 new directions? I think they are going to have to make a decision. And let's be honest here: decision on McCarthy will be made by Speaker Pelosi and the Democratic leadership. That's not something Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney can decide on their own.
Yeah.
That has to go to Pelosi, Hoyer, Clyburn, and have to sit down and say and think. They may not be here next year, so their answer may be a little different than Hakeem Jeffries. I think there's a little different equities here. Yeah.
I promised I'd get you out of here at the bottom of the hour. I'm 1 minute over, but let me get you out on this question. What should we read into Nancy Pelosi's announcement that she's running for re-election?
I wouldn't read too much into it, to be honest. I mean, look, I think there was a lot of rumors. There have been rumors all year. I'm sure you've heard it. I know the Republicans have been pushing this and semi-pushing this. It's a kind of a push-pull, if you will. You know, she's going to retire. She's not going to want to lose the House again. She's not going to want to give the gavel to McCarthy. So she's going to leave. She's going to try and jam her daughter into the seat or somebody she wants into her seat in San Francisco and go. And either Senator Hoyer becomes the interim speaker, or Jeffries moves in and becomes the first African-American speaker in history. And
so you think this could happen before the end of 22?
I've been telling you, we've been discussing this with people since January.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's been
something. So that had gotten enough traction that they decided to shut this down?
Yeah. I think, no. What you need to read into that was that story was a message to donors. Okay. I'm not leaving. Because if you think Pelosi's leaving, why are you giving Republicans are going to win? Yeah. Why the hell are you going to give the House Democrats? You already got Senate Democrats saying, look, the House is gone. Give us money instead. Right. I mean, you've already got that out there. There's already always that competition between, you know, we've covered this for decades where there's always one.
Oh, yeah.
She's trying to reassure K Street. She's trying to reassure donors. I'm going to be here. You can give me the money. I'm going to know how to use it. So I think that was fundraising. I don't buy any of this. She's not going to be in the House Democratic leadership. And we wrote this the other day, unless Democrats are in the majority. The only way she could be there is as Speaker, or she's not there in the next Congress. So I wouldn't read too much into it at all, to be honest.
Well, the fundraising point is probably the single most important point you just made there. Mr. Bresnahan, as always, sir, this was a pleasure.
Chuck, great to see you again.
All right, buddy. Happy holidays. You've been listening to the Chuck Todcast from Meet the Press. Today's episode was produced by Justice Gilpin Green and Matt Rivera. John Reese is our executive producer. Our theme music composed by Spoke Media. You can catch Meet the Press daily on MSNBC every day at 1 p.m. Eastern. Meet the Press Reports is on demand on Peacock, so subscribe now or download the app. Or The Big Show is available every Sunday morning on any platform you desire, including your local NBC station. Thanks for listening, and until we upload again.